The Ember Trail. Part 1. The First Decoding. There are nights when the noise is just noise, and nights when it starts to separate itself into layers you didn't know were there. That was the night I learned the difference. I was deep in a cleanup pass, doing what I always do. Removing hum, shaving off room tone, shaping the file until the voice could stand on its own. It was supposed to be routine, a practical job, a matter of signal versus clutter. Then the clutter changed. At first, it looked like a flaw in the waveform. A repeating pulse buried under the hiss, too consistent to ignore and too faint to be accidental. I zoomed in, then in again, expecting to find a software artifact or a mistake in the capture chain. But the shape held. It sat inside the noise like something deliberately hidden there, waiting for a patient eye and a careful ear. I listened through the low end first. Nothing. Then the upper bands. Nothing. Then the center, where words usually live when they're trying not to be heard. That's when the pattern began to take shape. Not speech exactly, a coded structure. The sort of thing you might miss if you were only listening for language instead of intention. I ran a deeper analysis and started peeling the file apart layer by layer. The spectral cleanup, the frequency separation, noise reduction. Every pass revealed another level beneath the last, as if the recording had been built to survive tampering. The signal had been buried inside the noise, but not erased. Hidden, yes. Obfuscated, certainly, but not destroyed. That difference mattered. What came first wasn't a sentence. It was a pattern. Then numbers. Then a sequence that repeated with variations too precise to be random. I copied the fragments into my notes and mapped them against each other until the structure gave way and became readable. That's when the first real truth appeared. There had been a message left inside the recording on purpose. Not for everyone, but for someone. The decoded sequence pointed to a phrase repeated in intervals across the file. Ember Trail. I let the phrase sit there while I checked the rest of the code. It wasn't just a name, it behaved like a key. Around it were embedded coordinates, timestamps, and references to places I'd heard of, but never connected before. The more I decoded, the more obvious it became that the file wasn't carrying just one hidden layer. It was carrying several. A message inside a message. A trail designed to survive everything that had been done to bury it. The coordinates led to a zone on the edge of the city where old utility routes cross under newer construction. A place the maps don't describe well. One of those sections that gets simplified on public plans until it looks like empty space, even though it never was. The notes tied to the coordinates were sparse. But they were enough to tell me the signal had not been random. It had been placed, preserved, left in a way that would only matter to someone willing to do the work of separating signal from noise. That was the first lesson of the night. Truth survives differently when someone tries to bury it. Sometimes it survives as a record no one thinks to check. Sometimes it hides in a texture, a pattern, a repetition. Sometimes it waits in the part of the file that gets dismissed as static. If you're not curious, it disappears. If you are, it starts to speak. I packed my recorder, my flashlight, and a small case of tools I use when I'm trying to make sense of damaged audio. Headphones, field notes, a portable analyzer. The city after midnight always looks like it had been paused between one decision and the next. Streetlights humming over empty intersections. Shop windows dark. Puddles reflecting buildings that felt older in the glass than they did in person. The air had that thin late night stillness that makes every step sound deliberate. I followed the coordinates until they took me to a service access off a road I'd driven past 100 times without noticing what was beneath it. Chain fence, concrete barrier, a locked maintenance hatch set into a low rise near the shoulder. Nothing dramatic, nothing that would attract attention, unless you already knew to look there, which I realized was the point. The lock was newer than the hatch itself. That told me enough. I got in through the side panel, careful not to damage the mechanism more than I had to. The space below was narrow, dry, and lined with old conduit and faded paint. It smelled like dust, metal, and the faint mineral taste of unused air. My flashlight found markings on the wall, lines, numbers, symbols half hidden beneath layers of grime. Not graffiti, not vandalism. A code system. Someone had been here before me, and they'd left instructions inside the bones of the place. I stood there for a long time before touching anything. That's the part nobody tells you about work like this. The hardest moment isn't the discovery. It's the choice to keep going once you understand there's something real waiting underneath. Curiosity can be a compass, but it can also be a risk. The difference is persistence. Whether you keep looking after the pattern begins to look back. I followed the markings deeper into the access tunnel, and the signal in my headphones changed. It was stronger now, cleaner, no longer buried so deep in the noise that it couldn't be mistaken for interference. It had become a shape I could almost hold. A structure in the static. A truth hidden in layers, waiting for someone with enough patience to pull it free. And somewhere ahead, just beyond the reach of my light, the next part of the trail was waiting to be decoded. The hidden layer. The access tunnel narrowed as I went, but the signal kept drawing me forward. It had changed since the first decoding. What began as a buried pulse in the noise was now clearer, more structured, as if the deeper I moved into the system, the less it had to hide. That told me something important. The message wasn't just inside the file I had found. It was threaded throughout the place itself. The walls were lined with old conduit, cables, and utility markings, faded almost to nothing. Some of the paint was chipped away. Some of the symbols looked hand-applied, repeated in careful intervals like someone had been mapping a route by memory, I stopped often to copy what I could. Numbers, arrows, short clusters of marks that seemed meaningless, until I laid them beside the audio fragments I had already decoded. Then they began to align. A notation here, timing pattern there. A repeated shape that matched a spectral spike in the recording. I had seen enough to know this wasn't random maintenance notation. Someone had been building a way to preserve information where it would survive interruption. The signal had not just been left behind. It had been encoded into the environment, into sound, into structure. Whoever made it understood that obvious records can be destroyed, but layered ones are harder to erase. If you bury the truth in enough places, somebody curious enough might still find it. That was the logic I started following. At the far end of the tunnel, I found a sealed chamber with a control panel that looked older than the surrounding infrastructure. The casing was scratched, the indicator lights long dead, but the panel itself had been wired into a larger system that still hummed faintly behind the walls. The signal in my headphones sharpened when I stepped inside. Not louder exactly, more precise. It was reacting to proximity, as if the room itself were part of the code. On the floor was a stack of brittle sheets tucked inside a rusted file box. Not official records, but working notes, diagrams. Short sentences written in block letters. They described interference patterns, frequency distortions, and a set of repeated anomalies that appeared across different recordings, different locations, and different dates. The documents suggested the same thing the audio had suggested, that there was more than one layer to what people thought they were hearing. I spread the pages on the floor and pieced them together like a puzzle. One sketch showed a waveform with sections removed. Another showed the missing sections reinserted in a different order. A third note explained why. Noise can hide what's real, but noise can also preserve what was meant to be cut away. That line stopped me. I read it again, then again. It changed the way I was thinking about the whole thing. I had gone looking for an artifact in a recording, a problem in the mix, a flawed signal buried under unwanted sound. What I was actually finding was evidence. Someone had used the very material of interference to protect what they didn't want lost. Static as a shelter, distortion as disguise. The so-called noise wasn't a mistake in the message. It was the message's armor. I checked the rest of the notes and found references to a location connected to the service route above ground. Not a destination exactly, more like a relay point. A place where information could be planted, echoed, and recovered by anyone able to follow the chain. The notes called it a transfer node. Though the more I studied it, the more it felt like a listening station built for a city that didn't want its own memory to stay intact. The chamber itself had its own sound. A low electrical hum under the floor. Pipe resonance in the walls. The occasional tick of cooling metal. I recorded all of it because I learned not to assume the room's background was irrelevant. In cases like this, the background is often where the answer is hiding. I ran another pass on the audio in real time, matching the room tone against the original file. The result was immediate and unmistakable. The hum in the chamber was the same interval as the pulse in the recording. Not identical in tone, but identical in structure. That meant the recording hadn't just captured the sound, it had captured the place. Or the place had been built to match the sound. Either way, the trail was deeper than the file, deeper than the tunnel, deeper than the first message I thought I had decoded. I had found a hidden layer, but the hidden layer itself was only another doorway. There were more levels in the structure than I had imagined, and each one suggested that the truth wasn't lost so much as it was buried beneath successive attempts to flatten it. That's how suppression works when it's done well. Not by destroying everything at once, but by building enough confusion around the thing that matters until nobody can tell what is signal and what is interference. By the time the record is found again, it looks like noise to anyone who wasn't already looking for it. I sat in the chamber and wrote down everything I had discovered so far. The sequence of marks, the coordinates, the repeated pulse, the transfer node, the files. The suggestion that the recording was a preserved fragment of something larger. Every piece pointed toward the same idea. The truth had been broken apart and distributed on purpose, not erased, divided, hidden in the layers. I stood up and followed the cable path out of the chamber until it led to a second corridor, narrower than the first and colder somehow. The signal was strong there, more present, less like a strange artifact and more like a guide. And that was the moment I understood the real task in front of me. This wasn't just about finding what had been hidden. It was about proving that the hidden thing was still there, still intact, still waiting for someone with the patience to separate it from everything placed around it to silence it. The recovered truth. By the time I reached the next junction, I wasn't thinking like someone chasing a mystery anymore. I was thinking like someone trying to reconstruct a lost record. The difference matters. The mystery invites speculation. A record invites verification. I had enough now to know I wasn't dealing with a random anomaly. I was dealing with a pattern built to survive silence. The corridor split into two paths. One side was dead quiet. The other carried a signal more clearly. I followed the signal. The air changed as I moved, becoming colder and drier, almost sterile. The walls were marked with the same repeated symbols I'd seen earlier, only here they were more frequent, more deliberate. A series of numbers, a short bar, a set of slanted lines, and then the same sequence again. It was a system. And the closer I got to the source, the more refined it became. I stopped beside a panel set into the wall and touched it lightly. The material vibrated under my hand, not much, just enough to confirm there was a live system behind the barrier. I set my recorder down and played back the fragments I'd already decoded, stacking them against the ambient sound of the corridor. The effect was immediate. The signal aligned with the architecture around me. The noise didn't vanish. It sorted itself. What looked like background became structure. What looked like clutter became evidence. That was the real breakthrough. Once you know how to listen, noise stops being a wall. It becomes a container. The notes from the chamber had mentioned a deeper storage space, something tucked beyond the relay path, a place where the information had been held in reserve until the right ear found it. I followed the cable route until it narrowed into a service shaft, then opened into a hidden room no wider than a storage office. inside were shelves. But unlike the archive room from the beginning, these held components, tape reels, labeled drives, printed frequency logs, folded maps, and bundles of paper stored in plastic sleeves to protect them from moisture. This was not debris. It was a collection, an organized effort to keep pieces of truth alive. I pulled the first reel from the shelf and inspected the label. It wasn't a name. It was a location and date. The second reel had a frequency range. The third held a short note. Preserve the distortion. That told me everything I needed to know about the mindset behind the system. Whoever built this understood that what others would call corruption was actually a form of camouflage. The false signal was protecting the true one. The distortion was part of the design. I threaded one reel into the player mounted on the shelf and listened. At first, just hiss, then the familiar pulse. Then a clean fragment of speech embedded inside the interference so carefully I almost missed it. Not a voice in the dramatic sense, more like a recovered remainder. A note from a larger message. A record that had survived being cut down to size. The recording described the process in plain terms. Build layers, break the message apart, distribute it through sound, through structure, through repetition. Hide the meaningful parts where they seem least valuable. In noise and gaps, in the edges of transmission. In the places people stop paying attention because they trust what is loud and obvious more than what is faint and persistent. I rewound and listened again. That's when the room changed. Not in a supernatural sense, in an investigative one. The kind of change that happens when enough disconnected pieces suddenly align and the world stops looking accidental. The shelves no longer look like storage. They look like a library of protected evidence. The recordings no longer seemed like random finds. They look like a chain of custodianship. Every item had a purpose. Every layer was there because someone knew that the future might need help remembering the past. That was the thing I couldn't stop thinking about. Someone had gone to enormous lengths to preserve what others had tried to suppress. Not just one fact, not just one event. The whole truth buried under contradictory versions until it could survive only in fragments. That was the real story here. Not destruction, but resistance. A record built to outlast erasure. I checked the maps next. The routes converged in a final point several blocks east of the relay corridor. Beneath the service plaza, no one would think twice about passing. The notes said that if the signal ever stabilized enough, the final layer would reveal itself there. Not as a dramatic revelation, but as a natural consequence of persistence. Follow the trail long enough, and the buried thing eventually stops pretending it isn't there. I packed the reels back carefully and stood for a moment, listening to the room's low mechanical breath. The signal had shifted again. It was no longer just a clue. It had become an invitation to continue. I left the hidden room with the maps and logs under my arm and headed toward the final coordinates, more certain now than when I had started. The truth had not been lost. It had been shielded. Not hidden to vanish, but hidden to wait. And that was the lesson beginning to take shape. The noise is never the end of the story. It is often the place where the story is trying hardest to survive. The last layer. The final coordinates led me under a service plaza that looked ordinary from the street and forgotten from every other angle. Concrete benches, a dead planter box, the kind of place people cross without remembering it a moment later. But the signal had narrowed to a point there, and when I reached the maintenance hatch set into the pavement, I knew the trail had finally reached its end. The lock was old, but not corroded. Used recently, that mattered. It told me I wasn't the first person to follow the path all the way through. I opened the hatch and climbed down into a narrow chamber lined with wiring, conduit, and a single control panel that still held faint power. The noise changed the second I stepped inside. The room wasn't silent, it was organized. Every hum, every vibration, every metal tick had a place in the pattern. I sat my recorder on the floor and played back the full chain of fragments I'd recovered so far. The pulse, the coordinates, the notes, the reels, the transfer logs. Layer by layer, the signal resolved into something unmistakable. Not a random distortion, not a technical flaw, a preserved record. A truth protected inside the very thing used to bury it. I studied the final panel and found a hidden compartment behind it. Inside was a stack of laminated sheets, all stamped with the same date, all carrying a single repeated phrase, "Do not delete the source." That was when I understood the shape of the whole effort. Someone had known the truth would be challenged. They had known the record would be cut apart, flattened, and called noise. So they made the noise into a vault. I copied the sheets, photographed the setup, and marked the location in my notebook. The work felt less like discovery now and more like recovery. The kind that happens after something has been buried so long that even finding it feels like a risk. But I'd learned enough by then to know that the important part was not just uncovering what had been hidden. It was proving that the hiding never fully worked. There was more in the pattern than the official record admitted. More beneath the surface of the city. More in the sound than anyone had been meant to hear. What had been suppressed had not disappeared. It had waited. It had layered itself into the noise and survived long enough for someone curious enough to separate it out. I climbed back out into the night with the evidence in my bag and the signal still faintly ringing in my ears. The city looked the same as before. That's the hardest part of finding a hidden truth. Nothing outside announces that you've changed. The streets stay quiet, the lights stay on. The ordinary keeps pretending it is complete. But now I knew better. There was always more than what first appears. Sometimes the truth is buried in plain sight, waiting for the patient listener. And sometimes finding one layer only leads you to the next. Next time on Smoked, Episode 2, The Man Who Kept the Spark. I'm Robert Bauer, and you're listening to Smoked, an Ether Originals production. If you enjoy this content, please visit smokedstories.com or find us on your favorite streaming platform. Thank you.